talks like an animal, talks like an animal, must be an animal, come hear the animal, talking animal, talking animal. Talks like an animal, must be an animal. Come hear the animals, talking animals, talking animals.
Good morning. This is Talking Animals. I'm Duncan Strauss, and my guest today is Michelle Lazaro, a Hallandale Beach City Commissioner and activist who has helped pass laws preventing pet stores from selling dogs that come from puppy mills. Puppy mills being commercial breeding operations that mass produce dogs in often horrific conditions with no concern about the health of the animals yielded at these backwoods enterprises. Of course, in Talking Animals, we always underscore the adopt, don't shop philosophy. But buying dogs from pet stores, at least these stores who get their dogs from puppy mills, frequently results in dogs that are sick, get sick, or in some cases die. That's why the laws banning these sales of puppy mill dogs are so crucial, protecting against these sorts of problems and frustrations and the attendant heartbreak. Florida has more of these laws than any other state, and the credit for this distinction goes to Lazaro, who has helped pass more than 35 of the 44 and counting such ordinances now on the books in Florida. As part of this conversation, we'll hear later from Karen Ankerstar, who, with Lazaro's assistance, recently helped pass one of these bans in Sarasota. Also later in the program, I'll speak briefly with Amber Simpson, organizer of the 6th annual Tampa Vegan Bake Sale, the proceeds of which will help care for homeless and feral cats. And that's taking place April 16th at Mojo Books and Records in Tampa. Right now, though, let's meet Michelle with a reminder that I invite you to join the conversation by calling 813-239-9663, emailing dj at wmnf.org, or texting 813-433-0885. Let's welcome Michelle Lazaro to Talking Animals. Good morning, Michelle.
Good morning. How are you, Duncan?
Good. Thanks so much for joining me today on Talking Animals.
Thank you for having me.
You bet. So I'd like to start, if we could, with asking you to describe when you first became an activist. What prompted it?
Well, that I fell into accidentally.
That's why I wanted to ask. That's sometimes the best stories. Yeah.
I had just had a puppy that died very young, about 5 years old, I call them puppies, but died 5 years old from a breeder, actually, and from the breeder. And I went into a pet store, and I was looking at puppies, and I asked the sales girl, you know, I'd heard about these horrible places called puppy mills. This is back in 2004, you know, before Oprah did her show and before anybody was really talking about them, but I had heard about them. And I said, you know, do these dogs come from puppy mills? And she said, oh, no, they come from these farms, and we go there ourselves, and we see them playing, and then we pick them out. So, of course, you know, I bought the dog for $1,000. And when I got home, I called my girlfriend, and I said, you know, I just got the cutest puppy. And she said, where'd you get it? And I said, a pet store. She said, how could you buy a dog there? That's from a puppy mill. And I said, no, it's from a breeder, commercial, you know, a USDA breeder. And she said, that is a puppy mill. And I'm the kind of person who doesn't like to be lied to, period. Just don't lie to me. So, you know, they lied to what initially sparked my anger and realizing that this was a form of fraud and that this was a lying by omission or double speak, whatever you want to call it. So then when my dog did actually get sick around 3 years old with a congenital illness for his entire life, that was it for me. I was off to the races. So I was doing protests. And I was doing things which really at that time was ineffective. And once I first heard about the Albuquerque law, I said, that's what we need to do right now. We need to do that now. So that was what started it.
So a few questions. First of all, I'm going to guess that probably feel very different nowadays, but much like your friend that you called back then, why were you setting out to buy a dog versus adopting one?
You know, honestly, I didn't even know about shelters. I really didn't understand the concept about adoption. No, you know, I had always bought my dogs, and I guess I lived in that bubble. People had asked me that, and I really, you know, I'm not embarrassed to say. I just didn't know about the idea of going to a shelter and adopting a dog. And if I had probably not reacted as quickly as I did with my dog dying and immediately going to get another one, somebody might have detoured me, but I just reacted as I had to have another dog immediately because I was so upset and I felt like I needed that. That would make me feel better. But I just didn't even know about that.
And subsequently, I think you since gone over heavily to the adopting side of the spectrum.
Of course.
Yeah.
I actually volunteered in the county shelter for 5 years, almost 5 years. And you know, let me just say this to you, Duncan. One of the things that's very troubling in doing this work is when somebody buys a dog and they, let's say, go on Facebook and they say, you know, I bought this dog at Petland, and I'm giving you an actual number now. We're talking between $3,000 and $7,000 for a puppy that they think is a purebred, a good dog, and then the dog gets sick and dies, costs them $10,000 in vet bills or $5,000, and they come on Facebook and they say something, and people begin to attack them and say, what are you, stupid? You know, how could you spend that kind of money on a dog? And, you know, I try to explain to people, this is a process for a lot of people. You know, I'm not embarrassed to tell you that I was living in a bubble and I really didn't understand the shelter concept. I thought that's where dogs went when they were lost. I didn't know that you could adopt from them. I try to explain when we do that to people, you're putting them in hiding and you're shaming them, and I need them for what it is we're doing. I need to produce people that bought sick dogs. So that only puts another obstacle by shaming people when they don't understand. But of course I adopted, and I adopted, you know, three little $1,000 Morkies and all the ailments that go along with them, all the luxating patella that goes along with them. So I got all those ailments for $50 instead of $5,000.
Yeah, well, at the risk of sounding a bit impertinent, Michelle, I guess you've come a long way, baby, in that regard.
Right.
But I think it's important because I think one of the sort of premises of this show, whatever the issue is that we all kind of learn and get exposed to different things at different times. And sort of ridiculous to even say, but I mean, you can't know before you know.
Exactly. And I think, you know, when somebody stands up, when the opposition stands up, and says, you know, well, how shelter dogs get sick? And I say they do. And I've got dogs that are, you know, genetically defective, probably from pet stores and puppy mills. But I wasn't lied to for those dogs. I spent $50 and I knew that what I was getting. You are selling a false bill of goods by telling people that this dog is genetically tested and has a bloodline, hereditary bloodline, and, you know, is going to be the picture of health for $3,000. You are selling false information. The shelters aren't. So that's the main difference when you get a dog from a shelter that they want to claim is also getting sick.
Well, okay, so let's pick up kind of some of the other points that you made in your earlier response. So talk about what the Albuquerque reference is and what that meant for you once you realized you had been deceived on this.
I was driving in the car with somebody. I read an MSNBC article, and it said, you know, that they had passed this law which banned the sales of cats and dogs in pet stores, and that since they had done that in 2007, that law, I believe, was implemented, they had found that shelter rates of euthanasia had gone down 33%. I'm giving you the rough numbers now. And adoptions had gone up, you know, somewhere in the same number. So they were actually seeing that over the last 4 years, they had this substantial change in those numbers. For me, it was about the consumer fraud and learning about all the people that have been buying sick dogs and the heartbreak that went along with that, in addition to the shelter, which came later. But my initial reaction for that law was that we had a way to finally stop these stores from doing this, other than protesting, that we could actually do something to impact this industry. Because for years and years, the advocates had been in Washington and had been fighting for better conditions, and they were getting worse. They weren't getting better. So there was no way for us to cut off the supply, so we needed to cut off the demand.
Yeah.
And I knew that when we did that, that would have an impact. So that was what I you know, strive to do as quickly as I could.
So over the years, we've done a number of shows dealing with puppy mills from one vantage point or another, still seeing that understanding what puppy mills are and what they do is central to our conversation here today. Maybe I could ask you to just describe what a puppy mill is and what it does.
This is such a, as one of Karen's colleagues has said, or associates, the commissioner used a great word, it's a pejorative term. It really does spark a, you know, hostility from the opposition. And And what it is really a commercial breeding farm that puts the health and well-being over the profit. It's a commercial breeding farm that puts the profit over the health and well-being animal.
There you go. Yeah.
No, thank you. I had the reverse. And I would like to talk also, Duncan, about, you know, the opposition at some point in this conversation.
Oh, yeah. No, we're going to cover the whole thing, okay. Including what you've been up against and as you went to travel down this path. I just think it'd be interesting to talk about the thing that launched you, which is sort of what you're in the first part of describing, because that experience with that. Was it Alfie, I think, was the dog in question?
Alfie,
yeah.
Alfie.
So,
yeah, and let me say this. When I started to see the pictures, because it's kind of like the slaughterhouse industry where there's a lot of money spent on not showing those pictures and not being able to see those pictures. And thanks to social media, we're all seeing things that we had never seen before. So once I started to see the ASPCA pictures of raids and HSUS pictures of raids, and I really started to get a sense of, you know, what was happening, it just fueled me even more. Because now I had the visual to go along with what I had been hearing about.
Right. So influenced by what you had learned and what went on in Albuquerque and your own anger about being deceived and what had happened with Alfie. So then how did you really sort of jump in? What really happened at that point?
What really happened at that point is we had a terrible store that had opened up in my city. And it was deplorable and it was really cruel, and we had nothing on the books even that regulated the pet stores. So they were able to do things that, you know, I didn't understand laws and the legal side of things, and that if there were no laws protecting animals, that they couldn't enforce a law. So they would say, we don't have anything on the books that would address this. So, you know, we were, the initial group fought to get conditions, you know, better conditions in the store. And I'm, you know, as being vegan, I've always said that I want no conditions, not better conditions. I don't want bigger cages. I want no cages. And that's always kind of been my philosophy.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, well, that's not going to solve the problem. So I want to take it a step further. And my city was relatively small, 4 square miles, 38,000 residents. I had a business up the street from the store. And I said, we're going to pass this law. And I went to the mayor. And I said, I want to pass this law. And she said, I don't support that because there's a business running. So I said, okay, well, now we have to get rid of the business. We have to stop the business. So we protested. And some days I was out there by myself. And we called code enforcement numerous times. And we just kept going until they finally got, you know, enough of the message and they left. And then once they left, I went back to the mayor and I said, now will you support it? And she said, no. And from there, it really became a fight because I had only had one commissioner out of five that was supporting it, and I needed three. And
so,
I didn't understand,
Michelle, sorry,
how government works.
Let me just back up for one sec. When you were talking about protesting, sometimes just as a solo protest, and then you said they left, does that mean the store in question closed down?
No, they had another business.
Oh, okay.
They went to another business. And, you know, it's funny you're mentioning that because that is their line of attack. That we are closing their businesses,
right?
Instead of them transitioning their businesses to a business, you know, to a better model, and they point to these stores like Petco and PetSmart and these box stores and say we can't compete with that. And then I'm able to point to Broward County, which has 11 stores, mom and pop, small stores that are not selling dogs, and 10 of them in Palm Beach County that are not selling dogs. So this idea that they have to do that in order to stay in business is a way to prey upon the sympathies and fears of the commission. And that's what they do.
Right. And I think anyone paying attention so far has already learned, do not lie to Michelle Lazzaro. You do so at your own peril. But meanwhile, so you still couldn't rally enough of the commissioners, I guess.
Right.
So then how did you advance that that cause?
Well, I went to the commissioner, who, by the way, was the 4-1 on a, he was the one on a 4-1 commission. So not only didn't I have the support of the others, they didn't even like him. So we strategized. We just worked on that for 16 months. I mean, it was, you know, when they talk about fighting City Hall, this is what I fought City Hall. And so in the process of doing this, we really kind of had to maneuver and you know, we had to say, this is the time to write it. This is the time to call the activists. You know, now you have to do it. We were just constantly trying to strategize. And I, you know, say that government is a marathon, not a sprint. And I did not know what I was getting into when I started it. But I had to see it through to the end, and I stayed the course no matter what. And as a result of doing that and us winning, this, we ended up with a 5-0 vote. This commissioner came and said, will you run for office? I said, absolutely not.
Let me interject here for a minute.
Okay, this is Karen Ankerstar joining the conversation. Go ahead, Karen.
I just wanted to say what Michelle was talking about. Once, and sometimes it takes a short time and sometimes a long time, once the commissioners, whoever you're trying to propose this to, know the fact, then, you know, then they were willing to vote for it. The problem is they have heard different things. The stores will tell them different things. Petland will tell them things that are not true. And but once they know the real truth and see where these dogs actually come from and how it's consumer fraud, in my opinion, about where they come from, then the commissioners will vote for it.
I wonder, I mean, you guys know a lot more about this than I do, but it's from what I've gathered, sometimes it doesn't seem quite that straightforward, where even if you present that information, there sometimes can be resistance or criticism. Or just disagreement, I guess, with...
Well, it's funny that you should mention that, because on the heels of, in preparation for the Broward County ordinance that is being proposed for all of the county, Deerfield Petland has taken out a full color page ad today in the Sun Sentinel, which I think comes in around $20,000, to accuse one of the commissioners and I of closing his business. So, you know, they are extremely threatened by this ordinance, as rightly so. So, you know, they are doing as many tactics as they can to stop us. And if I have an elected official, which is what Karen is saying, who doesn't even want to listen, that's my biggest problem. And I think Karen's also had that experience. They won't even listen to learn. They just have dug their heels in, they've staked their position, and you can't get them to understand. Then that's where you have a problem. And at some point, we know by now, Karen and I know by now, who that is and who isn't. And once I know I can't get that vote, I walk away, because I just know that I'm never getting that person. And so, you know, somebody who reads an ad like that is going to say that is true what they're saying. Michelle Lazaro doesn't know what she's talking about. She's looking to close these businesses. They are going to dig their heels in, and I can't get through at that point. You're going to have those people, but it is.
But I would think at this point, your reputation precedes you, mostly in a good way. I mean, I'm sure for people who are taking out those ads, probably in a not-so-good way. But I just mean that it seems like it'd be harder to make a case that you're up to no good, or that you're anti-business or anti-these stores continuing to function, when you have now a documented history of what your specific concern is and why you have that concern. But does that
And I think also, you know, these stores are, rather than, you know, they're being spoiled sports, and rather than try to stay and work with the community, they almost are like trying to prove to the commission by using their business that this doesn't work and look what you're doing, you know, kind of like, you know, just doing it spitefully. And it doesn't help us when people are like, yay, Petland's closing. I say that is not our intention, and we should never say that. And that is not our intention. We want them to stay in transition because it only helps us. So for them to just kind of take their toys and go home is not the approach that we want. But yes, I mean, listen, you know, Sunrise, Florida, you know, Mayor Ryan and his commission took on a federal lawsuit. And, you know, five of them in the United States, and all five of them prevailed, and even one appeal. People don't do that, or officials don't do that, and spend taxpayer dollars unless they truly believe that there is a reason to do that. Nobody would willingly, knowfully putting someone out of business and take on a lawsuit to do that. One business and not two businesses and not three businesses. They did that because there was such a you know, substantial belief in this movement, and that seeing this cruelty, and to stop. This is what it is, to stop that form of cruelty and commerce in their city, that they were willing to take on a lawsuit. So, you know, that's not just because people don't like them. There's a reason that governments have done that.
Well, and also, I mean, at this point, I'm holding in my hand several pages of very small type of all the the places across the U.S. that have implemented such legislation. And I have the Florida ones highlighted, but there's pages and pages of locations across the U.S. So,
I'm sorry.
No, I was just going to say, so it's not just some sort of weirdo thing in a couple pockets of the country that have said, right. Yeah, this is a good idea. I mean, it's becoming increasingly common. So,
Florida County, it took me 4 years to convince the commissioners that this was the thing to do. So you better believe they did the research and vetted everything before they
And she had to wait for a new commission, correct, Karen? She actually had to sit and wait for new electeds to come in before she could pass.
Oh, you mean so you could achieve enough of the votes on a particular body to get the ban pushed through, the ordinance pushed through?
Right, because I finally got enough commissioners that really were interested and understood what was going on. And just to kind of the main gist of it, Commissioner Charlie Hines, who was wonderful and running for re-election, everybody vote for him. His main thing was, I mean, he's very pro-business. We're not trying to shut down a business. They don't have to shut down, like Michelle said. But his whole thing was, let's see where the puppy comes from. If you want to breed German Shepherds, you know, and have a couple females and males, we're not going after these people at all, but go there, see where the puppy has come from. You can't do that at a pet store. They come usually from a Missouri puppy mill or Iowa.
Mm-hmm.
And as you know, Duncan, the conditions there are horrific.
Yeah.
So
well,
that's our major thing.
Let me just let folks know who just might be tuning in. This is Talking Animals. I'm Duncan Strauss. If you are just tuning in, my guest is Michelle Lazaro, a Hallandale Beach City Commissioner and activist who has helped pass laws preventing pet stores from selling dogs that come from puppy mills. She's had a hand in passing more than 35 such laws in Florida. And also on the line is Karen Ankerstar, who just recently passed such a law in Sarasota. If you'd like to ask Michelle or Karen a question or offer a comment, please call 813-239-9663, email dj@wmnf.org, or text 813-433-0885. One of our emails has come in, by the way. It says, please thank your guests for her great work. Keep breaking, quote-unquote, the bubble about breeding farms. It is so disgraceful that this still goes on without all the information out there. I hope all the listeners use these issues as litmus tests for local elections. Thanks.
Great.
So, Duncan,
I just wanted to say one more thing, not only about Karen, but when the commissioner came to me and he asked me to run for office, he said to me, you know, you can make great changes being Michelle Lazaro, Broward County resident, taxpayer, voter, but you can make even better changes putting commissioner in front of your name.
Sure.
And one of the reasons that I have been able to do, you know, move this in the way that I have is because I have put commissioner in front of my name. And, you know, part of the problem in government is everybody, especially us who love animals, you know, we want to chastise and, you know, blame our officials. But my suggestion would be to try to find a way to run for office, because that is where you have the most impact. And it does get you the meetings and it does, you know, help your credibility. And, you know, kudos to Karen. When I came in to meet Karen a year into her process, I said, you're never, you know, thought to myself, countywide, you know, she's net, you know, what is she, crazy? Because at that time I was still doing city by city.
Yeah.
And, you know, she did the majority more than anybody of the, you know, I would say it's all her. It was actually all her. All I did was help her with the documents, really. That was all I did.
Well, that's great. Well, let me point out a few things. One of them, it sounds like really your message is here, Michelle, is that, as we all often talk about on this show, the only way to really affect change is through legislation, either new legislation or legislation that has more teeth than the current legislation, depending on what the issue is. So you really took that in a serious way because you, I guess, basically had your activism propel you into becoming a politician.
Right.
And that
is part of, you know, the legislation, not only with me, but with this industry, has really made them sit up now on the opposition side and say, oh, no, now we want to talk.
Yeah.
Now we want to make things better. And it's kind of like, well, first of all, you're a fraudulent industry and we can't regulate you from, you know, we can't regulate Kansas and Missouri and Iowa from Florida. So I don't care what you're saying over there, because we can't see for ourselves. And you've been deceptive for all these years, and you've kept those animals in those conditions all these years, and all of a sudden now that we've affected your bottom line, you have this sudden change of heart and humanity and want to do the right thing. Well, we're not buying that. I'm sorry. You had your chance, and that's really how I look at it. I don't feel sorry for this industry at all. Those stores that are buying like Petland from these deplorable, horrible conditions, I mean, some of the worst of the worst, as soon as you catch them with their hand in the cookie jar, all of a sudden they said, oh, well, we won't buy from those people. We'll only buy from these people. And you know, that tells you right there that they got caught with their hand in the cookie jar and they're trying to make deals. But what people don't realize, and that's one of the things that they pitch that the commissioners buy into, well, they won't buy from those. They'll buy from these. And we always say to them, as Karen has pointed out to me, she was the one that educated me, who's going to stand guard and watch all of the documents from the dogs that come over the state lines? Are you going to do that? Who's going to enforce that? Because you really cannot do that. And we don't trust you.
Right. Sorry. But so, yeah, a few things, I guess, here. One of the things that seems like people listening might be wondering is, like, well, what is the upshot then as these bans are implemented for the stores that you made really clear, I think repeatedly now, that you are not trying to impact the store's business. You're not trying to close them down. You're just saying do not sell dogs from puppy mills. So what often happens, I think, once those bans go into place, and correct me if I'm wrong, is that then dogs come from shelters, from humane societies, from other places.
Yes.
That, well, of course, are looking for homes to begin with.
If they want to do that, that's fine. But what the Sarasota ordinance said is there's no retail sales of dogs. You cannot have a storefront and sell dogs because there's no way to tell where they come from.
Right, yeah.
They can say, oh, yeah this and was we a rescued, you know, poodle. We put $2,000 in to make them all better. Now we're selling them for $3,000 when he really came from a puppy mill in Iowa.
Right.
And even though Petland, as of next January in Sarasota, can no longer sell puppies or kittens, by the way, the president of Petland, Joe Watson, stated that over 20% of, and I'm going after Petland in particular because that's one we had in Sarasota County, over 20% of their stores do not sell puppies and are thriving. And there's over 30 Petlands in Canada, and none of them are allowed to sell puppies. And they're thriving.
Sure. Well, and one other thing, there's not surprisingly quite a few callers who want to get in on the conversation. We're going to welcome them in one sec. But I just want to point out one other distinction that, you know, we really should hasten to add, that there are, of course, breeders, although we're all sort of adopt, not shop people here, but there are breeders that are responsible and reputable,
right.
And we should draw kind of a sharp contrast between them and what they do, and in particular, they really sell directly to the public versus what puppy mills do, right?
That is the key point, is they sell, and many, many breed organizations will refuse to sell to any commercial store.
Yeah.
And that's the key thing.
That's
don't
the
see
other
what
point.
You're
no.
buying,
yeah.
you know.
No
don't
reputable
see what you're
breeder
buying
would sell to the store. Let me just pick up on, I'm sorry, Karen.
Okay, go ahead. And then I want to add some calls to the mix, but go ahead.
I just wanted to pick up what you were saying about the stores advocating for shelter and rescue through their stores. You know, there have been business models that have changed, I think in Philadelphia and a lot in Los Angeles, who did change and were successful by transitioning. And they've actually claimed that their businesses have improved by adding shelter and rescue dogs instead of puppy mills, by working with that, that is how they look at it.
Yeah.
It's not a product. I really don't mean it like that. I hope you understand, but
sure.
That's how the stores refer to it.
Of course.
So anyway, by changing that business model, they have actually increased their businesses, because people who would not have shopped there because there were dogs or puppy mill dogs have now decided that they're going to support that business because of working with shelter and rescue. So, you know, there are transition businesses in this country that have been successful. And just because Florida, and let me just say this to you, that the main problem with Florida was that we got sued. The first city that we passed it with a store got sued. That held us up for over a year from passing it anywhere that there were stores selling dogs. So we haven't even really had an opportunity before Deerfield for a law to go into effect that would show that someone went out of business. So that is a huge distinction. Karen's law hasn't gone into effect yet in Sarasota. You know, that won't go into effect until January. The first one that went into effect is April 30th. So we really can't say anybody's closed yet and it hasn't been successful.
Right.
Although there was a law that passed in Palm Beach Gardens, and he chose the day that he got the decision back he still had another few months or whatever, but the day he got the decision back, he went to his other location and closed that location. So nobody's proven that to be true. Sorry.
Yeah, sounds like a lot of hysterics and a lot of drama for sometimes just to see if they can kind of hold the line here. So let's take some callers here. Hi, you're on Talking Animals with Michelle Lazaro and Karen Ankerstar.
Hello?
Hello, it's you. Go ahead, please. A question or comment for Michelle or Karen?
First of all, let me say that I commend what they're doing as a former show breeder. But I think that there's a slippery slope here. And what the slippery slope is what's the next thing that they're going to get involved in? Cat mills? Animals come from somewhere. So where do they want animals to come from? And when do they think that they'll be able to stop doing what they're doing?
Okay, thank you for your call. And you guys, please respond.
Karen,
you
want
to take it?
I couldn't hear what he said.
I said the animals have to come from somewhere. He's a former show breeder himself and said it's a slippery slope. What's next dealing with cat mills?
Well, I guess my question to him would be, would you have sold your dog to a store?
There's plenty of breeders around. There's 3 million dogs are euthanized a year, and most of them are perfectly adoptable. And in any shelter, you can find purebred dogs. There's plenty of dogs. We're not touching the breeders, and I don't think that's well understood. It wasn't well understood by a couple commissioners in Sarasota. We don't want to tell the breeders, the local breeders, what to do. If you want, if you want to go to their house or their facility and see where the dogs have been bred and raised and how the mother and father dogs are treated, that they're not in a 2x2 cage for their entire life, then that's fine. So We're not going after the breeders. We're going after the trafficking of dogs from basically the Midwest into our state when we are euthanizing thousands of dogs already.
Let me read a couple emails that have come in, certainly eliciting all kinds of response.
And by the way, that question is very common. The question has been asked many times.
Yeah. And again, I guess I just want to underscore for the caller who asked that question, again, other people out there listening, like I said, we have done a number of shows about puppy mills over the years, but people didn't hear them or don't remember them, whatever. I mean, the key part of this is just how horrific puppy mills are. I mean, the conditions, I've posted some pictures, just not that really captures it in any significant way, but with some of the Facebook posts about today's show. And if you just Google puppy mills and God forbid you see video more than photos, then you'll really see what we're talking about. It's just mass produced dogs. They never get out of their cages. The moms are just like producing one litter after another. They're not cared for in any way. I mean, there's illness. And so, again, you get dogs from there and they either arrive sick into your home or they get sick. And frequently on top of that, they die. So that's kind of what we're talking about here. But let me read a couple of these emails. One to Karen: how can I organize my town to stop the sale of puppy mill dogs?
Well, it depends on what town they're in. And I guess just start, talking to the commissioners about it, or, I don't really know the answer to that.
He doesn't identify his town. Go ahead, please, Michelle.
I do. It's not a short answer, and there is no one formula. What works for Karen is not going to necessarily work for another city, and this is the unfortunate part of that. If she would like more information, she's more than welcome to email me, and I can address it directly, but because there's so many moving parts. Do they have stores?
Yeah.
Do they not have stores? Do they have commissioners that are dog lovers? Do they have commissioners that have dogs? I mean, there's so many factors and moving parts that there is no... To just run in with the ordinance to commission and say, pass this, really rarely ever works.
So, Michelle, should we send people to the website, the Hallandale Beach website, or do you actually want to give her email over the air? What would you like to do?
She can send it to me at M as in Michelle, but she can Google City of Hallandale Beach and get my address there also.
Okay.
But yeah, M Lazaro, just like, M Lazaro at cohb.org, which is City of Hallandale Beach. So cohb.org. Or you can forward me that email. Either way you want to do that.
Right. And it's Lazaro, Lazarow. We should print it.
And I will say there's a Facebook page for local. Unfortunately, it's called Shutdown Petland. One of Shutdown Petland Sarasota Facebook. We don't want to shut them down, but that's what it ended up being. We want to shut down the puppy business. There's also Shutdown Petland Bradenton. and that might be helpful for people, especially those that have bought a sick puppy or one that died and don't know where to go.
Yeah. The names, as you say, are unfortunate because it really sort of slightly
Correct.
Flies in the face of the points you guys were making earlier about what your intent
right.
is and what it's not. So
it, yeah.
let's take
and
another.
And then there's another page, sick puppies in South Florida. There's also information there that sick puppies in South Florida, they can also go there as well.
Okay, let's take another call. Hi, you're on Talking Animals with Michelle Lazaro and Karen Ankerstar.
Hello.
Hello, it's you. Please go ahead. Question or comment for Karen or Michelle.
Yeah, so I just wanted to comment on the whole general topic. I'm a vet tech, so I deal with people who just don't get it a lot or people who don't care. And it's so frustrating to just, it's even if you do buy a dog from Petland, I mean, the address of the quote-unquote breeder, puppy mill, is on the certificate, and I don't understand why. I mean, besides the fact that you're buying the dog from the pet store, you're not informed. Why are you not an informed consumer? You can just Google that address, Google Earth, as look up and see that this is not, you know, somebody's home where they're taking care of these animals. And there are responsible breeders that do that, and they have one or two breeding dogs, and they show them, and they love the breed, and they're taking care of the pets, and they're bringing them for their vet visits, and, you know, it's something that's very close to my heart, and I just don't understand why people still, in this day and age, with all the social media, with all the events, with everything that's going on, they still don't get it.
I think part of the answer to that may be what Michelle and I talked about earlier, is that whatever the issue is, in this case, obviously, dogs from puppy mills at pet stores, but people just learn things at different times, and they're not exposed to stuff, or they didn't read an article or hear a show like this or whatever, and so they don't know until...
And more and more they are being exposed, but yes, Duncan, you are correct. That's it. A lot of it is that people just don't know. But just to comment briefly on what she was saying about they can take the name of the breeder and go home and Google it, that actually is not true. A majority of them are violating the Lemon Law, which says that they have to have the name and breeder on their documents. Many of them are not getting their documents until they buy the dog, which is always what the stores... They violate the state law 19 ways to Sunday. And one of the ways they do it is by deceiving the public about where the dogs are coming from. So, and then when you do find out, Karen and I have found out numerous times, they work under DBAs. First, you have to know what website to go to. I mean, you could Google it, but the majority of them are working under DBAs, and they're hiding out, and they're not making it easy to find these people. So, and a lot of these dogs are impulse purchases. You know, let's just go in and look at the pup. So they're not going to take the time to go home and research and Google it. And, you know, so some of that is absolutely, you know, impossible and is going on here because the business is steeped in fraud from the beginning to the end. So they are going to do whatever it takes to cover that aspect of their business.
Yeah.
Right.
Thank you, caller.
We're
just about out of time. We're going to move on, but thank you for your call. That sort of brings me to the thing that we talked about, like, in more recent years, because when we first started doing shows about puppy mills, one of the things that's changed over the years is the ready access of getting dogs through the internet, which of course just compounds the problem. But anyway, it's a little bit of an offshoot because that doesn't involve usually a pet store, but it's the same problem if you're just anonymously, for whatever reason, you're doing it, ordering a dog and taking a complete chance on what you end up with. So we're sort of nearing the end of our time, Karen and Michelle, but with all the things we've talked about and all the difficulties and struggles and resistance that you guys have kind of addressed, Florida isn't always leading the way when it comes to animal welfare issues or legislation. Why do you think Florida has more of these laws on the books than any other state?
Karen, do you want to say why?
Hello?
Karen? We lose Karen?
Oh, maybe so. There was a lot of beeping going on.
Well,
maybe so.
I mean, obviously, I will... I'll take partial credit for that.
Well, I mean, you're responsible for what? 35 of the 40-some-odd, right?
I would say... Well, yeah, and ultimately, I would say almost all of them, because those who passed it, you know, wouldn't have found out about it had I not started it, even including Karen. And so, you know, I think that you can't really... You know, I can't say that this just went wildfire and gangbusters on its own. Actually, my concern is that now it's being picked up in places where I don't have access to that discussion or that information, and it's going to end up either with a loophole in the ordinance, which has happened, or lesser legislation, or the wrong legislation. So it actually has legs of its own now. But yes, this initiative was spearheaded by myself, and, you know, I worked on it tirelessly, and only this
Duncan, by the way, except for being a commissioner in my own city and passing laws in my own city.
Right.
This is all I have done, full-time, every day, all day. Committed my life to it, and that's why it's been so successful.
Right. Well, which brings me probably perhaps our last question then is, much like the person that emailed in, to what extent are you willing, if someone hears this or later hears an archive or a podcast, and even from a different state, I mean, to what extent do you have the time to continue to consult with people, whether they're in Florida or not, who themselves might want to push to get such a law passed?
I make time for anybody who wants to do this.
Okay.
Problem is that so few people execute. You know, they think, as did, you know, as I learned the hard way, is that you're going to run into a commissioner's office and you're going to slam down this ordinance and you're going to say, here, pass this, and it's going to happen. I set people to task, usually tell them the first three or four things that they have to do, and I never hear from them again. So I can speak to almost anyone about this issue. You know, if only half the people would start the process and finish it, you know, we'd be in good shape. It's not a problem for me to talk to people because so few people really want to execute and stay the course. Sam?
Absolutely. Like anything else, this requires tremendous tenacity, it sounds like, to really get
exactly.
All the way to the end. Yeah. So Michelle, give us one.
Anybody who wants to talk to me about it, I'm more than happy. And that's one of the reasons that I like doing these shows, Duncan, and any form of media, is to get this out there and anybody who would like to do it. So when there's press like yourself or people that have, you know, have opened this door,
yeah,
you know, I'm absolutely willing to help anyone.
Okay, give us one more time the best email address then for people who might want to seek your help.
It's M Lazarow, M like Michelle, Lazarow, Lazarow, at COHB, City of Hallandale Beach, .org.
Great. All right. Well, Michelle, thank you so much. I'm sorry we lost Karen there at the tail end, but I appreciate her input as well. Thanks for all your great work on behalf of all our dog friends and the human friends that, of course, would be impacted by getting unknowingly or otherwise a dog from a puppy mill. So thanks again for joining us today on Talking
Animals. Thank you so much, Duncan. Thank you. Really appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you. In a few minutes, I'll chat briefly with Amber Simpson about the 6th annual Tampa Vegan Bake Sale she's organizing on April 16th at Mojo Books and Records, the proceeds of which will help care for homeless and feral cats. Right now, though, it's time to step into the comedy corner. This is Aziz Ansari with part of a piece called Lady with the Puppies in today's comedy corner on Talking Animals.
Passengers can also be rude to you also. I was flying home once, and I was sitting next to this couple. They had these two puppies that they put under the seats in front of us. And there was an older couple sitting there, and they said, hey, you guys mind moving the puppies over a little bit so we can put our jackets under there? And the lady with the puppies is like, no, we have two puppies. They need all the room. Thank you very much. And I was like, whoa, why'd she need to be so rude about that? And then she started talking to her husband. She's like, can you believe those people asking us to move the puppies for their jackets? What kind of nerves do they have? Who do they think they are? And I was like, I can hate this lady. So I started chiming in. I was like, yeah, I heard that. I couldn't believe they'd ask something like that. Those people are awful. Those people are terrible. Those people deserve to be murdered. And I didn't say another word the whole flight.
That was Aziz Ansari. Part of a piece called Lady with the Puppies, taken from his CD, Dangerously Delicious. Let's move now into our conversation with Amber Simpson about the forthcoming 6th annual Vegan Bake Sale. Indeed, let's welcome Amber Simpson to Talking Animals right this moment. Good morning, Amber.
Hey, Duncan. How are you doing?
Good. Thanks for joining us on Talking Animals. Let's get a quick snapshot, if we could, of the history of the bake sale. How did it begin?
Okay. It was 6 years ago. Mojo Books and Records actually reached out to the community wanting a vegan bake sale. And my friend Lisa saw that. And we jumped on it because we were looking for ways to raise more money for the animals. And we've been there every year since, 6 year now.
So that's interesting. I was wondering what the Mojo Books and Records sort of connection was, but it sounds like really they were the ones that kind of pushed for this to begin with.
Yes. Melanie and Danny are big supporters of rescued animals and our local shelter. So they are very happy to have us there every year and very, very supportive.
Our kind of people. Cool.
Yes.
Let's make sure we hit the kind of when, where, why kind of deal. So tell me when this year's bake sale is happening and times and any other details that might be helpful.
Okay, so this year it is Saturday, April the 16th, and it is at Mojo Books and Records in Tampa off of Fowler, and it will be from 8 to 4. Now, the record store
it's in conjunction with Record Store Day, and that's why we pick this day every year.
Cool.
It's Worldwide Record Store Day. So there will be other things happening all day as well.
Yeah, but if you're a music fan, that's a great place to be. And if you're a vegan bake sale fan, great place to be. And if you're a cat fan, great place to be. So, in fact, the proceeds of the bake sale are directed to what sounds like a pretty ambitious slate of things to help feral cats, homeless cats, etc. Maybe you could outline how that works, like how that money is directed and what kind of cats are actually being helped and in what ways.
Okay, so for probably about the past 8 years, I've been involved in the TNR project in Hillsborough County, the Trap, Neuter, Return of Feral Cats. And since then, I've met a lot of different people that need help trapping cats, rehoming cats, fostering kittens, and all that costs a lot of money. Between that and medical expenses and supplies, basically what we do is we raise as much money as possible, and we help the community. People who need help with trapping, people who may have a personal cat that they cannot afford to have them spay or neutered, or they had an accident and they need some medical assistance and they can't take care of that, we help as many people as we can.
Wow, that's cool. So if you care about any kind of cats, basically, the cat in your front room there that's curled up, or the cats that live nearby that don't seem to have a home, at least at the moment, or anybody in between, going over to buy something at the vegan bake sale will help all of these critters. So,
yes, it will.
So Amber, let's be sure to offer a website and or a Facebook page where people could find out more about the bake sale and, again, how they could. I don't know if you're still, in fact, one of the reasons I want to do this sort of a week earlier than we otherwise might have is I don't know if you're still even seeking people to contribute baked goods.
Yes, we are. We are definitely looking for more vegan bakers. You don't have to be professional. Just whip up some cookies or cupcakes and come join us. As little as, or as much as you want to bring, every donation, as long as it's vegan, is fine by us.
Cool. Oh, sorry, go ahead.
Also, if you go on Facebook, the page Animal Advocacy of Tampa Bay would be the main page to find the latest info. We also have a Facebook event. So if you just search Tampa Vegan Bake Sale or 6th Annual Tampa Vegan Bake Sale, that should pull up for you and have all the details, all of our contact information.
Yeah, it comes up really quick and easy, I noticed when I was doing some posts. And I believe there's also, if this is still true or still good, there's also a website, right? Isn't there tampaveganbakesale.com?
Yes.
Okay, cool. So any number of ways. Now, for anyone who's listening, just our last moment here, Amber, and then we're sort of out of time, but for people listening who think, well, you know, how good could it be if it's vegan? I mean, maybe describe just one or more of your favorite baked goods that either you're preparing or that you like that's typically offered at the bake sale, because I think a lot of people who haven't maybe tried some vegan baked goods recently might be very surprised.
Well, believe it or not, most people that try our baked goods always comment that they can't believe that it's vegan.
Yeah.
Some of my favorites would be the peanut butter bars, s'mores cupcakes, s'mores brownies, some cupcakes, and cinnamon rolls are always a favorite.
Wow. I wish the bake sale was happening today. But so cool. Okay, so again, that's Saturday, April 16th, Mojo Books and Records, pretty much all day, 8 a.m. to 4 p.m. And again, go on Facebook and just search for Animal Advocacy of Tampa Bay or search for 6th Annual Tampa Vegan Bake Sale to find out more. And again, if you like this idea and maybe want to contribute some baked goods, so much the better. So Amber, thanks so much for this. Such a cool project that you're involved with, and I'm happy to talk with you about it today. Thank you.
All right, thank you.
Coming up at 11 on WNF, it's Rob Lori and Radioactivity rolling in the noon hour. It constitutes a full 2 hours of interviews, phone calls, news, and more with contributions from members of the stellar WNF staff, including, of course, Everyday Ethics with Craig Kopp. Meanwhile, as the prize for Name That Animal Tune, I'll be offering a highly coveted Talking Animals t-shirt. It's true. Well, the t-shirt part, not sure about the highly coveted part. Right now, we'll just do a quick round of animal news and announcements, including this Friday. I want to call your attention to an event coming up called An Evening in the Islands. It's to support Meow Now, which implements TNVR programs for community cats. Speaking of what we were with Amber, that's Trap, Neuter, Vaccinate, Return. So it's happening this Friday, the 8th, at Antiques and Uniques Garden Courtyard in Ozona, and there's food and drink and other cool stuff, entertainment. You can find out more by going to meownowfl.org. They do ask if you could to RSVP by the end of the day, but you can find out more by going to that website, meownowfl.org. Also, you know, you or your dog can be in a music video by the great band and WNF fave Have Gun Will Travel. They're looking for video clips, photos of you and your dogs, and you can send those to havegun.willtravel@outlook.com, and they might end up in the new music video by Have Gun Will Travel. How cool is that? So just want to let you know, too, that the Bark in the Park at Freedom Lake that we spoke last week, Detective Hunt has been postponed because they're concerned about the rain, so it's now happening April 23rd. All the other details are the same. It's at Freedom Lake in Pinellas, and you can find out more by going to PinellasParkCPAAA.org. All right, I think that's all we have time for today. I'm Duncan Strauss. You're listening to Talking Animals, where the website is talkinganimals.net. Time to proceed to name that animal, Tim. This is a giveaway, but please only participate. If you haven't won something from WNF in the last 90 days, there'll be a prize, a Talking Animals t-shirt, to the first person who calls 813-239-9663 and correctly identifies this animal song. Let's name that animal tune on Talking Animals. We may take our guesses off the air because we have just about reached the end of today's edition of Talking Animals on WMF. Rob Beloy is up next with what amounts to 2 hours of radioactivity. I'll be back next Wednesday, April 13th, with another edition of the show. We have a link to the Talking Animals Facebook page, our Twitter feed, and more. All kinds of things at talkinganimals.net. I'm Duncan Strauss. Thanks very much for listening. Have a good week. Be kind to animals. Be kind to others. Be kind to yourself. This is WMNF Tampa, Brandon, Clearwater, Largo, Weeki Wachee, and beyond. Community Conscious Radio. Thanks for listening. Speak to you again next Wednesday at 10 a.m. on Talking Animals. Thanks.